And now I would like to introduce you to Dr. Uday Ranade. He is our orthopedic surgeon from last 2 years. And he has studied in Russia. He took his basic training in Russia. So he will be basic training, master degree he has taken at Russia. And now after completing his studies in Russia, he came to us. And he is very enthusiastic and he wanted to share you about the health care of bones and joint. Now I am giving you to Dr. Uday. Om Shanti. Thank you.
It's good to know that a lot of people have visited Global Hospital, and I can only hope that it is only as tourists, not as patients, because one likes to see good people, but then not on beds, I mean not in course of duty. Can we on that, please? Yeah. When I was told to take a lecture on, informal discussion on back and joint care, specifically in the elderly population, I didn't know actually where to begin, because it's a huge topic, no doubt about that. So what I have tried to do is I have tried to limit it to three things, things which I see in my day-to-day practice on a much frequent basis, and I have tried to limit all the medical jargon inside and give you only absolutely practical points which might benefit you in your day-to-day lifestyle. So topic is back and joint care in the elderly. Specifically, why have I mentioned elderly population? That is because more of our common problems associated with the musculoskeletal system, that is orthopedics, comes with bones being degenerated as we age. Degeneration starts in some people at the age of 40, and in some people around the age of 50. But on an average, if you consider the older generation, that is a generation before my time, that is your generation, you would find that people got these complaints around the age of 60 or 65, and now I see it very common among 40 and 45 as well. So there is a distinct shift from the age group which had complaints to the age group right now which is showing some complaints. Well, some of the most common reasons for an orthopedic consultation are pain associated with the spine. It may be either the back or the neck, hip and knee pain, and heel pain. Almost around 60% of my total consultations in any given month is associated with low back pain. Low back pain is so common that it is, at least in India, it is very, very, it is probably the second or the third cause of disability among elderly population. And according to data that I have got in the US, it is the second most common cause of disability, accounting for 16.5% of total disability. So you can imagine the amount of strain it has on the government's resources, which provides healthcare, on private resources, and on the patient itself. The patient is robbed of its reproductive life, in a sense that where he can produce something beneficial for society. And there are so many other problems associated with back pain, which limit a patient from doing his day-to-day activities. Low back pain, I don't know if how many of you, have you ever experienced low back pain? Anybody? Yeah? So you know that it can be acute or chronic. Meaning, acute meaning sudden low back pain, like you try to lift something heavy, or you have done some work which is more than the average that you do. If you have travel long distances on really bad roads, I mean, you can have that experience over here. Go in a car, travel for 2 hours, and I assure you, you will have back pain. It may be acute, or it may be chronic. Chronic is when acute back pain won't go away, no matter what you do, and the back pain persists for more than 3 months. That is when we call it chronic back pain. So chronic low back pain is more important to deal with because there are so many dimensions to it. At the first, when you start having pain, there is obviously some kind of pathological process. There is some kind of factor which has caused the pain. As I mentioned, it may be because of excessive stress. It may be because of bad posture. It may be because of a lot of things. But there is, in the beginning, a pathological process which causes the pain. But as time progresses, and as you have pain all the time, there is a psychological factor also added to pain. And now it has been shown that pain is no longer simply a pathological or a physiological process, but it is also a psychological one. The psychological implications of pain are quite important, in the sense that chronic pain over a given period of time is bound to cause anxiety. One, because the patient doesn't know, or the person suffering from pain doesn't know, why is this not getting rid of? I mean, why is he not getting rid of this? And secondly, it is going to cause depression. Depression is a very significant comorbidity factor with any kind of chronic pain. It may be lower back pain, or it may be any kind of musculoskeletal pain. But depression is found to be approximately 70% in patients suffering from low back pain over a period of 6 months. That, in addition to social factors. For instance, your back pain is going to limit you from not enjoying life to the fullest, from not going out, meeting your friends, having parties, because you can't stand for a long time, you can't sit for a long time, you need to rest. And that causes loneliness. This is also very common. So if you find that your doctor at any given point in time has prescribed you an antidepressant, don't be worried, because nowadays antidepressants are a major, they play a role in the medication which is given to a patient with low back pain. Back care in everyday life. I am not going to go into the details or the pathological process, how pain is caused, because it will just go on and on. I won't be able to finish in today. So, one thing I would like to assure you is that back care does not stop when you leave work, meaning that you don't have to take care of your back only when you are working or when you are doing some activity. It actually is a 24/7 process, meaning that it has to be taken care of 365 days a year. If you ever forget this, and if you were to continue doing something which is harmful for your back or for any part of the musculoskeletal system, then you are going to end up with pain in that particular part of the body. Common causes of back pain, which I find in my OPD, outpatients department, is bad posture. Very, very common. How many people actually stoop? Have you ever realized? You must have watched, in a mirror. I mean, even when you sit on a computer, work online, or you're sitting and writing at a desk, so many people have a habit of stooping down like this. And that is the most important cause of neck pain, which is bad posture. Okay, so bad posture is even more common than what we call a disc problem. Disc problem is a problem when between two vertebrae we have something called as a disc, intervertebral disc. And this disc actually acts as a buffer mechanism for our spine, so that it can transmit all the stresses, all the loads that we give to the spine while our day-to-day activities. This disc, if it gets degenerated, it ends up pressing on one of the nerves which exit through the spinal cord, and that is what causes pain. But this accounts only for 4% of the total back pain. Around 70% is because of bad posture. The other ones are muscle sprain, that is when you have injury, and overuse syndrome, which means that you are giving excessive stress more than what your body can take. So let's begin it with back care in the bedroom. As you all know, around 8 hours on an average is what people sleep. So one third of our lives are spent in bed. So that's almost like, that's a very significant amount. So if you have problems when you get up in the morning, that means something is wrong with your bed and you need to change that. Now, what are the signs which will tell you that you need to change your mattress? First, if your mattress is more than 8 to 10 years old, you have to change it, minimum, okay? Mattress is floppy, uneven, or lumpy. You'll find that in really bad hotel rooms. You can feel the springs easily. You roll together unintentionally. You wake up with pain or stiffness in the back. Now, that the last point is very important, because at any given point in time, even if your mattress is new, if you get this particular pain in the back or in the neck, that means either your sleeping posture is wrong, or the bed is not really good. So how do we end up buying a good bed? Now, I'm giving a little bit more emphasis on this particular part, because as you can see, like one third.
So one patient of him is in the hospital, so they want to know. At the time he come back, I just would like to tell you one thing. There are a few health packages in the global hospital, and you know, many double foreigners. It's not only when we are sick we should go for health checkup, but it is mainly to create that awareness among us that we should have our, you know, level of our blood pressure, diabetes or cholesterol or everything should be in right order. So it's a very reasonable health package. So whenever you are here and if you would like to know, so we have introductory brochures and few leaflets of Global Hospital newsletters are also with me. So you are most welcome, because few foreigners, they were saying that when, just for knowing that everything is okay in health body, it costs so much in their countries. But here, you know that if they are member of BK Healthcare Fund, so immediately it is 30% less to them. Back to doctor.
Really sorry for that. Okay, so I guess you all read it by now. Buying a bed, don't put new mattresses on an old base. Very sensible. To find the right degree of firmness, lie on your back and slide your hand under the curve in your lower back. If you have ever noticed, this part of the back has a natural curve. It is not straight. Okay, so when you lie down, suppose I'm lying on a bed, and if I can pass my hand very easily, like it goes in and out, that means it is too hard. And if I cannot pass it, which means that it is too soft. Okay, so you need something where you can easily slide, but not too easily that it goes the whole way inside. Okay, that is very important. And ensure that the bed is high enough to get on and off easily and comfortably, and to make the bed without bending. Okay, that is the most important part. It should not be too low. If it is too low, you are going to bend when you are going to change sheets or covers. That should not happen, because bending is something that we try to avoid whenever we have low back pain. It tends to give more stress on your back. Okay, it's back. Well, are you sitting comfortably? Sitting on a soft sagging chair can cause stress, even though it may feel comfortable. Okay? So, a firm seat giving support to the lower back will help maintain the curves of the spine. Now, the spine has two curves. Two front curves, two back curves. Your neck has a front curve. The chest and this part of the spine up till here has a back curve, then this part has a front curve, and then lower down. So those curves are very important to maintain, because your muscles are balanced according to those curves. If those curves get a little bit damaged, or there is too much stress on the curves, then your muscles are going to go into disbalance and there is going to be spasm. So this is very important. Now the posture this young lady is lying in is terrible, is absolutely terrible. I mean, she's going to end up with back pain, definitely. So is that gentleman over there. This is not the posture you can ever adopt. Same thing over here. Now, there's one point when you're buying a new chair. Supposing you're living in a family with people having different heights, then make sure that you buy the chair according to the person who is shorter than the rest. Because for him, it is going to be more important. Or else you buy individual chairs for everybody. Seat should be high enough for you to get out of it without arms folded. For instance, like, supposing I'm sitting like this over here, I should be able to get up straight away. I should not need to take the support of side arms. Understood? This is very important. It means that the chair is of proper length. For instance, there, it might be a bit difficult for me to get off. I might have to use this thing. So this kind of chair where you don't have to get up and you can just get up straight away is the kind of chair you want. Ensure you can sit back against the lumbar support. Lumbar support is this, okay, behind part. And still put your feet flat on the floor. Other ways of back care, especially while driving, make sure your car seat provides firm support to your back. Okay, this is of prime importance, because that is the time when you are liable to damage. Two things in the car. One is the jerks. As I mentioned, if the road is bad, then there are too many jerks around. So that is something which has to be avoided. And to a certain extent, support can be provided if your car seat is good. Secondly, avoid twisting when getting in and out. What I generally tell my patients who drive for long distances is that when you open a door, sit on the chair or sit on the seat, on the driver's seat or wherever you're sitting, and then swing your legs in. Don't try to put your legs in first and then try to sit, because during that point, you are going to twist and turn your spine. Okay, and that should be avoided. If you have pain, back pain problems, first make sure you sit on the seat and then you put your legs in. If your work makes you travel long distances, then I generally recommend to break your journey, like 45 minutes drive, park your car, 5 minutes of stretching exercises or some kind of walk just to get out of the car and then resume back. Okay, so every 1 hour, at least 5 to 10 minutes of stretching exercises are required if you are driving for long distances. At home, put the laundry basket on a chair to reduce bending. Whole concept is very simple. You don't have to bend. If you bend, it is going to cause you problems. So everything is adjusted to such a way that you don't have to bend. It's the same thing when you use a washing line. Like for instance, this woman over here, she has kept it down, so she is going to bend. She has to bend over here, which is going to cause back problems. Same thing over here. It's preferable to kneel down on a cushion if you have a front-loading washing machine. When you have back pain, a shower may be more comfortable than a bath. Washing your hair in a shower avoids bending over a sink or the bath. This is also very important, which we generally tend to neglect. And adjust the ironing board to avoid stooping. I have tried to get day-to-day activities, which basically we do without even realizing that we are doing it, in which you can avoid having back pain. What do we do when there is acute back pain? Heat local hot water bottle, like heat application, or a hot water bath, shower, better. Bed rest for a day or two. Increasing your activity slowly. Once you've taken bed rest for a day or so, you feel better. You increase your activity slowly in a gradual manner as per pain tolerance. Do not resume your normal level of activity immediately. Okay? Tylenol or any kind of anti-inflammatory which reduces pain, painkiller basically, and wear lumbar corset or belts. You must have seen those belts which people wear, lumbar belts. They help a lot when you have acute back pain. Okay, what are the things that you have to be very, 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 you have to notice when you have back pain? One is, if somebody has back pain and a history of cancer, there is a reason for that, because some of the types of cancer, they do tend to metastasize, meaning spread from the place of origin or the organ from where the cancer started to another place in the bones, and that causes back pain, especially spinal column over here. These are very favorite sites for metastasis. Unexplained loss of weight, intravenous drug use meaning narcotic drug use, prolonged use of corticosteroids. Steroids are given nowadays in a lot of pathological conditions, like you have asthma, you have certain kind of collagen vascular diseases. Older age, major trauma, accidents, fall from height, very common to fracture a bone in the vertebra. Osteoporosis, I'll come to that a little bit later. Fever, back pain at rest or at night. Okay, so back pain at rest, it means that whatever you have been doing is not enough and you require some serious investigation to find out what exactly is the problem and to rectify it. Generally, back pain will ease at rest. Meaning, once you stop the activity which has given you pain, if you stop that, you will get some relief. And if that does not happen, that means it is time for you to get some investigations done, like an X-ray or an MRI or any kind of investigation which your doctor might suggest. Bowel or bladder dysfunction, it means that some nerves somewhere are getting pressed because of your back. Maybe a disc herniation, that is a disc degeneration as I mentioned. It may go on behind and it might impinge or put pressure on some of the nerves which are responsible for bowel and bladder function, thereby causing some kind of impairment in this bowel or bladder dysfunction. If that happens, then also you need to go and get some investigations done. Treatment modalities for chronic low back pain. This is what generally is followed all over the world nowadays. Medications, NSAIDs are non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. they cause, they act as painkillers and they reduce pain, muscle relaxants, because what happens is whenever you have back pain, it is a natural defense mechanism of our body to cause the muscle to go into spasm. Now, why does the muscle go into spasm? It is not because there is a pathology in the muscle, but the muscle goes into spasm to reduce activity. If you have muscle spasm, you obviously are not going to go on resuming your usual activity. So the body is indirectly telling us that please reduce your activity, I need some rest. Okay? That is why muscle spasm is more of a defense mechanism. But since muscle spasm causes pain, we give muscle relaxants and antidepressants. Second is physiotherapy, including physical exercise therapy. Physical exercise therapy, generally, I try not to advise a patient for physical exercise therapy when he or she is going through acute episode of back pain. Because what happens is that generally tends to increase the muscle spasm and that tends to increase the pain. So I always advise the patient not to go for physical exercise therapy, only bed rest for a couple of days. And once the pain has subsided, after a course of muscle relaxants and non-steroidal anti-inflammatory agents, then we can go on with physical exercise therapy. Physiotherapy like ultrasound with phonophoresis, you must have, if ever or anybody has visited a physiotherapist, they have these circular instruments which they give local heat to the back and sometimes they put a gel underneath it. So that gel actually can be an analgesic gel, and the local waves, ultrasonic waves which are provided by that probe, they tend to make the gel go deeper inside and cause muscle relaxation and therefore pain relief. Modification of lifestyle to reduce overall stress to the spine. A part of it is what I just mentioned before, like certain things which we do in our day-to-day life, which we can help to reduce overall stress to the spine. Weight reduction, if necessary. If you have weight, you may not be obese, but if you have weight more than the recommended or more than the normal for your particular height, then you need to reduce down on weight, because even 1 or 2 kilos that you reduce will reduce significantly the amount of pressure your spine has to take during its day-to-day activities. Does this happen a lot? Third world country, sorry. Yes, na, you must na. Yeah, the question is how long do you have to take calcium supplements when you have osteoporosis? And the advice is for all your life, if you are above 50, if you are above for men, and if you are postmenopausal in women, you have to take calcium supplements. This is about the dosage of calcium and the kind of calcium that the lady is asking. What happens is, I have this part of lecture later on in osteoporosis, and I just wanted to mention what are the kinds of calcium supplements that you can take and what is the amount, what is the maximum amount tolerated by the body, and how much is required. Along with it, what other things are required to increase your bone mass. Because bone mass is the most important thing. I'll just give in brief till we get back. What happens is, in everybody, till the age of 30, is this getting translated? Da, paruski yata pirivojit sao. Parasho. If you are till the age of 30, there is something called as peak bone mass. Peak bone mass is the amount of mineral density of the bone which you achieve till the age of 30, and this remains pretty much constant in men till the age of 50, in women till menopause. Okay, after menopause, in women, postmenopausal women tend to lose approximately 2 to 3% of their bone mass every year for 5 years. This is because it loses. The body loses effects of estrogen. Since estrogen levels go down, and you start losing a lot of calcium from the body. 2 to 3% is a very, very significant amount of bone. 2 to 3%. If you compare that with men, it is approximately around 0.5 to 1% during the same time. So it's quite a significant amount of bone. And this is a bone which is not going to come back. Can this be accompanied with pain? Yes. The lady wanted to know if there is any danger if the calcium that you take can actually go out and lodge itself inside the coronary arteries, or for that matter any arteries. I would like to tell you the maximum possible dose, or let's say permissible dose of calcium is 2.5 grams per day. 2.5 grams per day is quite a lot. What you actually require is only around 1 gram per day, which is 2 tablets of calcium. And always make sure that the calcium that you are taking in has elemental calcium. Okay? Elemental calcium is different from the calcium that is written on the medicine. The medicine would contain calcium carbonate, say 1.25 grams, but it is a salt of calcium. Actual elemental calcium is always written one line below that. It is always written calcium carbonate 1.25 grams, or say whatever the dose, equivalent to elemental calcium 500 milligrams or 400 milligrams. It depends upon from manufacturer to manufacturer. It may vary. So what you actually need is 1 gram of elemental calcium, because that is the calcium available for you for absorption. Now, we need a lot of things other than that. Calcium, the most important factor required for calcium absorption is vitamin D. And if you don't have vitamin D, then the calcium that you take through the medicine is going to just go off. It is not going to be utilized in the body. Vitamin D supplements are required to the unit of around 200 to 400 international units. One normal vitamin D, standardized vitamin D, which is available in the market, would have a minimum of 200 international units. In a person above 50 years of age, with a vitamin D requirement is around 400 international units. Okay, so you need to take 2 tablets of vitamin D, because vitamin D is produced in the body. If you come from a place where the sun shines a lot, then all you need to do is expose your forearms and your head, that amount of skin, around for 25 minutes to the sun before 11, preferably before 11, because after 11 there are certain types of ultraviolet rays which are not really that good. So before 11 in the morning, if you were to expose your forearms and your face to the sun, that guarantees the amount of vitamin D that would be produced, would be required for calcium absorption. If you come from a country where it doesn't happen, then yes, then you need to take a vitamin D supplement. Yes, please. I am very skeptical about acupuncture, because I have had my, let's say, I'm more like a Western medicine man, okay? I'm not into acupuncture or, for that matter, alternative medicine therapies. Research which says that acupuncture is beneficial is not really there. There are conflicting reports of whether acupuncture is helpful or not. But chiropractic, there are some reports online also which I found yesterday that they say that around 40 to 50% do experience pain relief after the first session of chiropractic. Okay, so maybe that tends to help, but I really don't have data on acupuncture. Same goes for one of those bloodlettings. Okay, like we do venesection, like in Ayurveda, or for that matter in magnetotherapy. No data at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's what I said. See, there is no consistent, it's definite. Well, of course, if you like getting poked by needles, yes, why not? All right. Вопрос был такой, что акупунктура, вы знаете, вот вы знакомы с этим. Ей это помогло. Хорошо. А она говорит, что надо это делать. Я говорю, что у меня нет данных на этого. Вот. Может быть, это помогает, может быть, и не помогает. Но нет таких данных в литературе, где сказано, что это действительно помогает. Поэтому не могу рекомендовать ее. For two reasons. One is, as we age, the question is, why don't we get enough calcium from the food that we eat? There are two reasons for that. One is vitamin D, okay? With the production of vitamin D decreases with age, little bit, not that much. And secondly, the natural absorbing capacity of our intestines to absorb calcium decreases with age. That is one reason why we need to take calcium supplements. Thirdly, in women, because of low estrogenic bone ends up losing a lot more calcium than it can take from food. Question is, how do we deal with pain in the heel? Heel pain, or what we call as calcaneal spur. The one thing that we could do, see, well, what is calcaneal spur? Now what happens actually is your heel bone is, say, suppose something like this, okay? And then what happens is, because of some kind of inflammation over here on this point, you end up getting a spore like this, a small bone formation over here, okay? Unfortunately, there are a lot of ways of treating this, but no definitive reason, no definitive way of just getting rid of it once and for all. The thing to do that I advise is first going for conservative therapy, which means no operative anything. And if that does not succeed, then going for operative therapy. Conservative therapy involves physiotherapy, shortwave diathermy. It's a process by which you give local heat. You try to decrease the inflammation over there. Second, by giving local corticosteroid injections. That tends to decrease the inflammation and give pain relief. Third, changing your footwear, the kind of footwear you use. If the sole is very hard, it is going to cause you pain, obviously. So what we need to do is have heel cushions down and then get some pain relief by that. If that doesn't work, there are other therapies which involve cutting off the bone that has grown surgically, or else dissecting the nerve which supplies to that area and thereby giving pain relief, but none of them are like 100% solution, because the spur does tend to come back again. Yes. Question is how a lot of people in the elderly age group tend to have pain in the hip joint, and what can be done about that? Hip joint pain can be because of multiple reasons. If there is no other particular pathology found, most common cause of hip joint pain is osteoarthritis, which is degenerative osteoarthritis, wherein the cartilage of the joint gets a little damaged, and that tends to cause pain. It is the same process which takes place in knee joint, and that is the cause of pain and disability. What can be done about it? One is, you can take some kind of chondroitin supplements or glucosamine supplements, like chondroitin protectors. Second is a type of medication which reduces the degeneration. These are called interleukin-1 inhibitors, which are also available in the market. Third are, if it's a knee joint, then you can take injections of sodium hyaluronate. This is a kind of viscous supplement which is injected into the joint, and it basically does the job of plastering. Like if you have a wall and there's cracks in the wall, then you end up plastering them. Something like that, yes, in a very crude sense. That tends to give a lot of relief. Relief may range from 8 months to a period of 2 to 3 years, depending upon the pathology, the severity of the pathology, and the kind of patient compliance after the injection. And fourthly, if the osteoarthritis is so significant that patient has pain with every step he or she takes, then yes, there is a reason to do joint replacement surgery. Question is operation in degenerative osteoarthritis of the hip really necessary? It's a difficult question to say, for simple reason that all joint replacement surgeries, all joint replacement surgeries have only one indication: pain in the patient. If the patient complains of pain and cannot tolerate the pain, and the pain is not eased by any kind of physiotherapy or any kind of injections or any kind of medications, then yes, there is only one choice, that is changing the joint in the prosthesis. Yes, Sokha, Jin Bhushat. Which all substances other than milk products can cause, can give us calcium? Well, one is, you can take soya, very, very high amount of calcium there. Green leafy vegetables like spinach, fenugreek. Heard of fenugreek? Methi, it's called in India. It's very good. What I generally advise to patients who are osteoporotic is that you take seeds of fenugreek, soak it in water overnight. They become soft. Just drink the water and the seeds. Do not bite on the seeds because they are very bitter. Okay? So that helps a lot.
Okay.
Do you want me to resume now or do you want me to resume? These are seeds of fenugreek. And what I generally advise is that take around 1 spoonful of these seeds, soak it in drinking water overnight. They become soft. And just drink the water along with the seeds. That's for increasing your calcium content. Calcium content, yeah. Alright, alright. It's going to be difficult trying to get everything in one bit. Okay, we've done this. Alright. That acupuncture thing, that's why the question mark. Because we don't know exactly if it does help. I mean 100%, like there is no confirmed data on it. That is why I have not really given that as a... Okay, some of the danger signs, having low back pain. One is a pain which is associated with the conditions I mentioned before, like trauma, osteoporosis, cancer, infection. Pain radiating from the back, from here, towards the gluteal region, the buttocks, and the thigh and below. If that sort of pain does not disappear on rest or in changing posture, then that is something that shows that the nerve is getting compressed too much and it needs to be decompressed. Other sign of this particular condition is when you have numbness all over your limb or some part of the limb or the toes where the numbness doesn't go away after a particular period. See, what happens sometimes is that you do get numbness. I don't know if anybody suffered from sciatica before. But there is a numbness in some regions, most commonly over here, and other common region is the sole over here. If that numbness doesn't go away by taking rest, then that means the nerve is getting compressed quite a lot. And difficulty in moving any part of the limb, indicating muscle paralysis. This is an indication where patient has to go for surgery. There is no other alternative. The nerve has to be decompressed. The pressure on the nerve has to be removed. Okay. Well, this is what I wanted to tell you about osteoarthritis, but what we can do is, if there are people here in this audience suffering from osteoarthritis, you can contact me in the hospital from 3 to 5, and we can have one-on-one sessions, or if there is a group of people from the same, suffering from the same problem, then we can all meet together and then we can have more sessions that way, because I've taken too much of your time already, more than half an hour. Just wear and tear, wear and tear of the joint, that's what is osteoarthritis. This is same procedure happens in hips as well. If you can realize, if you notice this point, see this is the knee joint, and this is the space between the knee joint, okay? Now, look at this joint, totally touching each other, almost, right? Almost touching each other. Now this is what is osteoarthritis. What happens is, this joint, this space between this black thing is not actually a space. There is something called as cartilage over there. And that cartilage gets degenerated, thereby causing bone to touch with bone. And that is why you get those cut noises when you move your knees or your hip. Okay? Starts commonly at 40 to 45 and then gradually progresses. Causes are very similar. Age, yes, one cause. Overweight, very important cause. Sedentary lifestyle is another cause, and excessive activity also is another cause. Congenital weakness of cartilage, trauma, and other conditions like rheumatoid arthritis. How to prevent arthritis? Weight reduction, very important. 1 kilogram reduced is a reduction of 100% on the knee joint. That is 100% reduction of stress on the knee joint. That's significant. To have an active life with weight-bearing exercises, to take proper care, don't protect your joints by doing nothing, because that will only lead to stiffness, you know. Instead, you have to learn how to load your joints correctly, okay? Because if you just sit on the couch and do nothing, it's not going to help. may be easier to cycle than to walk. Exercise in water, swimming, very good. If you have the facility to go and have a swim at least thrice a week, that will help not only your back, but also your knees and the hip. It is preferable to do little and more often than doing too much at the same time. Toilet seats, low chairs and beds should be raised. Preferably take showers, not baths. That is, do not lie in the tub. Okay? Use of a walking aid can also make a big difference. Physical and mechanical interventions are the same. Heat and cold applications, use of walking aids, shoe alterations and physiotherapy. One last thing about physiotherapy I would like to mention is how it helps. Physiotherapy restores function to the maximum degree possible through exercises by reducing pain, increasing joint range of motion of the joints, improves muscle strength and addresses specific restrictions in activities. But physiotherapy has to be patient tailored. It cannot be the same for everybody. Like for instance, the activity demanded from a manual laborer would be different from that of an accountant sitting in an office. Right? It's but common sense. So it is always preferable to do this under guidance from a physiotherapist or a physical exercise instructor. When do you need a joint replacement surgery? That's what I was mentioning. When you have so much pain that it restricts your day-to-day activity to the extent that you have become dependent on someone else to give you a glass of water, to help you go to the bathroom, to help you get from here to the kitchen or to eat or whatever, that means you require this surgery. Because the main purpose of joint replacement surgery is to improve the lifestyle of the patient, to improve quality of life for the patient. It is not based on the doctor's insistence that no, your joint has totally degenerated, you have to do surgery. It is not the case. Indication is from the patient. If the patient has significant amount of pain at rest and during the daytime, during working or during doing his day-to-day activities, and if it is making him or her dependent on somebody, then yes, knee replacement or hip replacement has to be done. If that is the cause for disability, that also has to be kept in mind. What to expect from a joint replacement surgery? Unfortunately, most of the patients that I operate, most of the patients with whom we go through this joint replacement surgery, they tend to have unrealistic expectations from the surgery. They think they're going to be like 20 years younger and, you know, like going to Olympics and run a whatever track or something. It is not going to happen. This is to make you mobile and not dependent. If you expect that you can run and catch a train or a bus or you can just, you know, do around what you were doing 20 years ago, that is not the case. It is very essential for the patient to have a proper expectation from the joint that he or she is going to get, because this helps in the post-operative record. The post-operative return of movement would be significantly helped, and the longevity of the implant is also helped by proper patient education, which unfortunately I must say that a lot of times does not really happen. Certain myths about joint replacement surgery. If somebody is interested, please contact me and then we can deal with this a little bit later. Okay. I wanted to tell this about osteoporosis, but I think most of the things have already been covered and I won't take more of your time. Thank you very much. Oh yeah, just one thing. Sorry. You already clapped your hands, but then still. This is one thing in postmenopausal women. As I find that a lot of here are women in a majority, one thing we would like to state is, we divide this thing in three graphs, okay? This is during the immediate postmenopausal phase, where we advise hormone replacement therapy, okay? This is to reduce the symptoms of flushes and all. And after a certain period of time, we start on something called as raloxifene. For more information, please contact your gynecologist, because he or she would be able to tell you much more in detail about this. Hormone replacement therapy is not taken for a long time because of increased risks of endometrial carcinoma and other kinds of cancer and pathological processes. So hormone replacement therapy goes on for a short time, which is then replaced with raloxifene and bisphosphonates, which are very safe that way. Thank you.